Right, we're right. VFX, visual effects is the computer stuff.
Yeah, that's the computer stuff. We're SFX.
Yes.
But you guys use SFX as the is it the acronym for sound out in the States? Is that right?
It is also that,
it is. Which is weird. It's like, stop stealing our stuff. It's like no, it's special effects. It's basically practical effects. So it's like it's your it can be your engineering mechanical work, but it can also mean your practical effects, as in your atmospherics. So you've got your wind effects, your smoke effects, your fire, your explosions, so your pyrotechnic sort of stuff, bullet hits, all that sort of good stuff. But it's all on camera, all physical. And yeah, that's basically the majority of our work. We do get mechanical rigs and stuff like that, but they're usually pre-built by engineers, and then we'll bring them onto a set and we'll actually pretend that we made them and we'll use them, even though it's actually the clever engineers that have made them. And we take the credit.
We are the
Get Realisms Podcast.
I am Adam Chase Reddy.
And I am Christine Chen. And surprise, we're both filmmakers.
We get into it by sharing secrets, advice, and gossip in filmmaking.
We even get our other filmmaking friends to share theirs too.
So please, everybody, join us for
an ode to filmmaking.
In our fourth season of Get Realisms, we dive deep with our esteemed guests from various film positions for a fireside chat, or rather, a fire watch chat, and discuss their perspectives on what goes down in our industry. Enjoy. Oh my goodness, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Get Realisms podcast, episode 101. And a special shout out to everyone who was there on the 100th episode. That was fun. I had a phenomenal time. Thank you so much. We had the champagne roll down in this podcast. That's history in the making, ladies and gentlemen. But what better way to start off our 101st episode than with a special guest? So my name is Adam Chase Rennie.
And I am still Christine Chen.
Oh my goodness gracious. And Christine, we have a little special someone.
Yes, introduce yourself.
I am Leon Harris. I am a special effects technician from the United Kingdom.
Yes, because where am I? I am in the UK, guys. That's why it's dark here. Yes, it's very exciting. I'm very excited because I can't believe I'm here in the UK. But we're not in London. We are in Exmouth.
Yes, near to where I am. I'm not gonna dox myself, but
no, I was about to say don't yeah, okay,
yeah. It's nearer my neck of the woods, basically.
Sure. And,
it's very cold down here. Yes. Very cold. Oh, very cold. Dark. Yeah,
how cold is it
dark
out there?
And cold.
It's about, I don't know what it is on in that stupid conversion you do, but it's like minus 3 degrees Celsius or something, so whatever.
It's pretty cold.
I don't know what Fahrenheit is.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's not like freezing.
No.
It is freezing.
It is freezing.
But not like, but
it's minus three.
Yeah, but there's no snow.
Oh, it's -3? Oh, interesting. Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah, that's freezing, sure. Christine. Hi, yeah, that's freezing.
Yes. Yeah, but there's no snow.
No, it ices up. But basically, because we're near the sea. And the sea really prevents, because the sea winds and all this sort of stuff, and the salt really prevents the snow.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Yeah,
we get sleet here in Texas. It gets wild with the ice sleet.
I was there in January when the snowstorm happened. So
were you really? Oh, yeah.
not the first one though, the second one.
Yeah.
Second one. Okay. Well, that still stunk too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was stuck in my apartment for like 4 days because I just couldn't get out. I was right around the corner from the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, and it's just stuck there.
And you just couldn't walk around. Yeah.
Even DoorDash wouldn't deliver to me. It was like, this is terrible. I was going to swear then.
Oh, you can swear.
All right. Okay.
Oh, you can.
Come on. Yeah. Yeah. Just, yeah. We don't care.
Not at all.
Well, that's crazy. So Christine, you've been there for only a couple days, right?
Yeah. 2 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, only 2 days. Proper British welcome.
You had a proper British welcome?
I did. I came in, I had slept zero. I couldn't sleep on the plane.
Well, you don't sleep anyways. Movies.
That's true. I have slept, I do sleep more than I used to because I am old now. But I didn't sleep on the plane at all, caught up on movies, and then got to London, then took a train several trains later, ended up in Exmouth, and he came to pick me up and took me to a proper pub. Well, a carver. Yep.
It's a pub, but we had a carvery at the pub.
We had a carvery at the
pub. A Sunday roast dinner, but on a, when was it, Wednesday?
Wednesday, yes. Yeah. Yorkshire pudding.
Yeah, yes. Yorkshire pudding. All the vegetables, meats like beef and turkey and like pork and stuff like that. But basically, what you just said, it's like a Thanksgiving dinner.
It's feels like a Thanksgiving dinner.
But we decide to have it every day if we feel like it. Because we're thankful all the time.
All the time, yes.
Well, it's, I mean, it's kind of worse here. Like, there's bar and grills here in America that are just like, you get like steaks and like baked potatoes and shit like that. Like, you get like crazy, like, even a 3-course meal sometimes at a bar and grill, it's pretty stupid sometimes.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Cracker Barrel, actually. It's my guilty pleasure.
Listen, I love a Cracker Barrel too. That's awesome. Yeah.
That's it. Well, I've come out a few times since I did the movie with Christine.
Yes.
And I was actually out last in October, so only a couple of months ago. And I just kept going to all the places. Like, I went to Goldie's Barbecue, which is in Fort Worth.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it's now apparently voted number one. So it's actually beat out Franklin's and Snow's and all that sort of stuff.
It's good barbecue.
Oh, yeah. It's damn good.
Oh yeah. My God. Yeah. So you're planning on coming back to Texas then?
I come back frequently. Yeah. I've been there twice this year already.
He loves Texas. Right. He would love to work more in the US, but there's, because he's from the UK, it's complicated.
It's weird with like sponsorship and
oh, like visa wise. Okay.
Yeah.
I think basically because I've got American friends that work in the UK, and I think they have to be technically sponsored, which is like basically you just have to pay a sum of money to that union,
right?
Which he will get on the production, but he will pay the sponsorship himself, and that's the sort of deal they work, which is it's like a couple of thousand, but it's like. But that's absolutely fine because then you make obviously a lot more than that doing the movie. Mm-hmm. So I mean, if I could say to someone about the sponsorship, it would be like, well, if I just pay my own sponsorship, and it's like, you just sign the paperwork. It's like, well, yeah, I could work on a movie then. But I'm not quite sure how the union really works in the States. It's because I actually got told at one point that my credits might not even count, and it's like. Okay.
Yeah, which is weird because he's in the union in the UK. Yeah, that's why he gets to work on the big
that's
stuff.
That's it. I've
worked and it on doesn't transfer in the US. That doesn't make
that's
sense.
That's what we're not sure.
Not sure.
Yeah.
I've worked on.
Yeah. I think it's to prevent people from, because they want locals, you know, to work so that people like Leon will take all our jobs.
Yeah. Take our jobs.
Stop taking our jobs. Yeah.
Stop taking our jobs, guy. Yeah. That's
I'd be dead in like a month out there anyway. I just eat all the time.
I mean, there's a lot of that's the thing with Texas, just like it's mostly comprised of restaurants. So if you want like a good food experience, Texas is the place for sure.
I put on so much weight when I came out there. Like every time I come out there, I put on my weight. Like I went to Texas Roadhouse again. I think when I was out in January, I went to Ruth Chris, and it's like just places like that we don't really have in the UK.
Met on a set in Texas is how we our paths crossed. It was about three years ago. Out in not really Dallas, it was
it's Fort Worth, a sort of Cedar Hills sort of area we're around.
And so we met there, and he did the special effects. And actually, could you tell us what's the proper what makes something special effects?
Okay.
What a segue,
not
Christine.
To be confused, right. Not to be confused with visual effects.
Flawless,
everybody.
Flawless segue.
Yes.
visual effects is what we call them in the UK. They're very sneaky. They keep trying to call themselves special effects, and they're not. They're VFX.
Right. VFX, visual effects is the computer stuff.
Yeah, that's the computer stuff. We're SFX.
Yes.
But you guys use SFX as the is it the acronym for sound out in the States? Is that right?
It is also that.
It is.
Which is weird. It's like, stop stealing our stuff. It's like, no, it's special effects. It's basically, it's practical effects. So it's like, it's your It can be your engineering mechanical work, but it can also mean your practical effects, as in your atmospherics. So you've got your wind effects, your smoke effects, your fire, your explosions, so your pyrotechnic sort of stuff, bullet hits, all that sort of good stuff. But it's all on camera, all physical. And yeah, that's basically the majority of our work. We do get mechanical rigs and stuff like that, but they're usually pre-built by engineers, and then we'll bring them onto a set and we'll actually pretend that we made them and we'll use them, even though it's actually the clever engineers that have made them, and we take all the credit.
Yeah, it's cool because he's been showing me like some pictures and videos and stuff of things that he cannot share, and there he will have to be careful when he talks about some of the stuff because he has NDAs and whatnot.
Yes,
but of course there is one cool rig
here. You have a target on your back, Leon. We don't want anything happening. Get it.
So there was this one cool rig that he said he had to build like in a week, but it was an elephant that's breathing.
That's not out yet. So very careful, not gonna say where that came from.
Yeah, no, but that's pretty cool though, like shit like that, that's so neat. And then like catapult or whatever.
Same thing.
But I want to. So before we get kicked. Well, before we get Leon fired from all of his gigs, I want to ask Leon. So going back to the special effects to visual effects. So I always were under the term that it was visual effects myself when I was growing up. So like when I would watch commentaries or when I watch like filmmakers like have other podcasts and stuff like that, they always call them visual effects. And I never quite understood that, why people, when I work in the industry, call them special effects. But when I think of special effects, I think of like American Werewolf in London, like prosthetics and like, you know, rubbery and shit like that, you know.
we literally just had a discussion about that, because the way the industry works in the States is slightly different to the way the UK is. I mean, because basically, from what my understanding is, you have to be in props first before you can actually be in special effects in the States, which is completely untrue in the UK.
Interesting.
Like, you don't have to be in props. I've never been in props at all. You know, it's like that. We're completely.
You never worked art department?
No, props are part of the art department. Art department will oversee a little bit of what we do, but they don't really have anything to do with us. They will say, oh, we kind of want this, and so yeah, sure, we'll do that, but they don't really, you know.
Adam's in art departments,
right? I'm a set dresser though.
In a hierarchy, technically, if you're going to look at it as a pyramid anyway, art department are still above special effects, but it's like it will be art department, prop, special effects, and they're separate, and it would just be still two different departments. So it's like we don't really interact unless we need to, because then that props have nothing to do with us.
Right. Because it would fall under, like, if anything, camera, if they had to choose a department, but it would probably be like post, right? Like just a post, like,
I guess so. Job. But I mean, props are just art department, really. It's like art department will speak directly to props, and art department will speak to us if they, like they'll say for particular, when I've run a job, I'll have like the standby art director come up to me and say, right, okay, in that particular area over there, we're going to see quite a lot of it, or quite a lot of the ground. It's meant to have been snowing, so can we get some snow dressing down? And then I'll get my guys to go over and I'll get some dressing down. And then I'll refer back to the standby art director, and I'll say, is that good? You cool? You happy with that? And they'll be like, yeah, okay. And they're like, all right, wicked. And then we'll do our thing, which will be, say for instance, we'll have smoke in the shot, or we'll have some flames in the background, whatever, but that's nothing to do with art department,
right?
You know, I mean, that they may say, oh, it'd be really nice if it was over there. It's like, well, we can't move it, so no.
Yeah, that's not my department.
And it will be something like, well, you should have asked that before. It's not really an argument, it's more of a, I'm sorry, that can't be done. Mm-hmm. in the nicest way possible, but sometimes not in the nicest way possible.
Politely fuck off.
Sometimes it's like, off. Just leave me alone. it can get a little bit competitive on set, which a lot of people know, but it's usually fine
in the UK versus here.
It's from what I've understood in the UK. I've not really worked on too much American stuff to really see too much. The job I was actually on, everybody was pretty great, so I can't really fault what went on there. It was ridiculously low budget.
Yeah, super indie.
Yeah, I mean, 100 grand compared to like a couple hundred million stuff for what I work on. It was out of my element, but I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was a challenge with some of the stuff. Some of the stuff I wanted to do that were out of budgetary restrictions. Mm-hmm. But
that's also why it's fun to do low budget indies, because you can't throw money at the problem.
Yeah, it challenges yourself, because then you're actually, rather than throwing money at it, you're actually being good at your job, you know. And it's like right, okay, well, I can't just go out and hire the best thing. It's like, how can I make it, you know? Mm-hmm. Or how can I make the equivalent that will look great,
right?
You know? And we did a lot of that, like I think the movie's been out.
You can talk about it.
We were meant to do a fire rig, which was just basically a practical fire outside, which if I'd had time, I would have done it myself, but I tried to get it organized. And it turned out that the supplier was trying to charge an extortionate amount. Like way too much, like $2,500, and I was like, well, I can build it for 50, and it's like, but I had no time, so I had to do it for real. And it was, you know, it worked out, but it's things that happen, you know. So some people will hear a movie, and then unfortunately, the price goes up, doesn't it? So it's unfortunate, but it happens.
Yeah.
But given the time, and if I were to do something like that again out in the States or on a lower budget stuff, the main thing I would want is time, because that's what I need. I can build all this stuff myself. It's just I need the time and materials. And then the thing is, it's not like you then give it back. You've then got a made rig that can be used forever.
Yeah. So, exactly.
Yeah. It's yeah.
A lot of problems on set is either you have money or you have time, you know. So it's like no money, more time. That's usually the issue. So
it's starting to get that way on bigger stuff as well. It's like we used to get like 6 months of prep or something like that. Now, so sometimes you get a few weeks, and it's like, wow, this is not enough time.
Yeah. Just a few weeks? That's insane. Yeah,
sometimes, I think Dark Shadows, we had like 6 months of prep, but that's going like back over a decade. But
wow, like, really?
Lately, I mean, I won't name particular productions, but they seem to be getting less and less prep time, and it's like, oh, actually, we're running out of time. You know, it's like, so.
What's the most complicated thing that you've built that you're allowed to talk about, or you can say these things and not name particular
products? That I've built personally?
Yes.
It gets a little bit tricky, because I don't consider myself an engineer. I'm not clever enough to be an engineer. Okay. The guys in the workshop, some of these people are just like,
they know
some of the most smart people I've ever met in my life. But they're not set people,
they'll always be in the shop.
They'll never go on a set. They'll stay in the workshop. They like their tea breaks. They like their strict time. They like going home at a particular time, starting at a particular time. So they have no hour changes. They have no overtime, but they go in, they do their job. That whether it's welding or building or designing the rigs, mm-hmm. but it gets done. And some of these people are just. The stuff I've seen some people do is fantastic.
Yeah. But I guess maybe not you personally, maybe like as a team, what's the most complicated? Because I know a lot of the stuff isn't like you. It's like a whole ass team.
I mean, the guy, I guess I can name him, Mark Bullimore, is a very, very clever man I worked with a couple of times. And he, it's quite funny because he's a ridiculously technical person, like so smart. And he would always go around in a lab coat, and it was just a thing. You know, he's just quite eccentric, but smart people are always eccentric.
Just walk around like a chemist.
Basically. Yeah. But you just see him like staring into space for hours, and it's just like, you just wouldn't bother him, because it's like, well,
genius is happening.
He's thinking.
Yes.
It's like, right. Just leaving the lab. Yeah.
But I mean, this guy, I got told once, because I was a trainee at the time. This is like a long time ago, but it's like I got told, it's like, go over to Mark and say, didn't you love the CG for the computer effects for the Harry Potter snake door in Chamber of Secrets? And I was like, what?
That's very specific.
It's like, He's like, go over and say that to him. And I went over and he's like, no, it's not CG. I made that. It's real. It's real. And he's got a video on this terrible flip phone, like from the 90s. It's awful. Like the picture quality is awful, but it's real. That's not computers.
What?
It's real. That guy made that door. Like the whole thing, all the matches and everything, the snake going all the way. That's real.
That's practical.
I thought it was.
That's real.
I thought it was effects as well.
No,
I thought it was all effects.
No, that's real.
What?
And I thought it was fucking incredible seeing like even the snake crawling around the door.
Was seeing that. I remember
seeing that. Snake was real.
That's insane.
I remember that was one of the moments in Harry Potter when that was shown. I was like, whoa, the detail of this. That's what made me love Harry Potter, was some of those little details. I cannot believe it's real.
Yeah, well, Harry Potter isn't real, but...
Well, yeah.
Well, no, Harry is real, Leon. You don't understand.
But, so this guy, basically, anyway, very, 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 very clever guy. And we were doing a couple of rigs for Dark Shadows. It's like, again, I was a trainee at the time. I was on set occasionally, not often, because at the time, when you're a trainee in the UK, you start in the workshop. I already had my pyro experience, so I actually started on the prep team. So I was just down testing all the explosions for spoiler if you haven't seen a movie that's been out for 10 years, but Dark Shadows, when we did a huge cannery explosion, we were doing a lot of tests for that. So it's like a lot of flame effects and stuff. So there's a lot of testing. But
you could blow shit up. That's awesome.
It was actually a very safely done explosion. I won't actually get onto the internet on live medium explain how explosions and how to do that. I'm not going to cancel myself, it was a lot safer than you would think of how we actually achieved that.
Gotcha.
But I told you about
it. Is that the that's cool.
It is. But we were also doing stuff with so Mark was there's a part in it where there's a secret staircase, and it I think it's in their front room, their living room, whatever you want to call it, where Barnabas, who's played by Johnny, reveals a staircase that goes down underneath, which is behind the fireplace.
Yeah,
all completely real. All the mechanics, all real. Like I
how long did that take? That's crazy.
That took a month and a half, maybe. But it's different people making it. Like the staircase, made by a couple of engineers who are like welding it together and stuff like that. But it's actually the portrait. You don't see a lot of this, which is really annoying. You've almost got to pause it. But if you go on the film Dark Shadows, I apologize for having to make people watch Dark Shadows again, because it's not great.
It's whatever. Yeah, it's whatever.
The original script was very
good. The original is... there's an original script?
I'm not sure if I should say.
Okay, yeah, we can put a shelf on that. That's interesting, though. Yeah, I want to ask you after the pod, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe. but anyway, there's this fantastic part where... If you look up on top of the staircase, that obviously everybody's eyes are going to be drawn to the stairs moving back and going down. But if you actually look up on the mantelpiece, there is I think there's either two or four wolves, and they're fully sculpted, and they turn and howl. So they look up. Obviously, they don't actually howl.
Yeah.
But they turn towards the portrait, look up, and the portrait is completely made of metal. So it's been machined. I think it was actually water cut. So it's like all this metal was very very thin, and it comes in, and the when the wolves turn and howl, the clouds are metal as well, and they come back and reveal the moon. And that's when the staircase opens up, and it's the detail you don't see, and it's like in Mark.
That's very intricate. Yeah,
it's very good, but there's a lot of stuff like that you won't see. But that's special effects, you know. You won't see a lot of what we do, because if you do, or you notice, it's like special effects, or sometimes if the smoke's there, or you see the smoke, or you see particular things, we're not really doing our job right. You know, you aren't meant to really tell that what we're doing is there. It's meant to look real, you know, like rainstorms and snow and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, that's generally us. They don't usually just wait for snow.
No, they need artificial snow. You can't depend on Mother Nature. Yeah. Get out of your mind.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to ask you to be a dickhead. But you don't have. What are you allowed to say that you've worked on?
Well, I'm allowed to say anything I worked on because, I mean, my IMDb is out there for anybody to see. But
yeah,
right.
I don't know. What genre?
Let's just start listening.
Yeah, Conjuring 2, Fast and Furious 6, Dark Shadows, Game of Thrones, Justice League, Annihilation. God, I'm going to have to check my IMDb because I forget what I've been on.
Christine sent me your IMDb. I can list them off.
All right. Yeah, I was just because I not in a
no
egotistical way. So
No.
It's a different world that we're in.
Yeah, I do forget sometimes. So it's like,
Just to put the audience into perspective, holy Christ, Leon, this is a lot. I just realized this is so much. You worked on the Crown.
It scrolls down. Yeah,
you worked on The Crown, you worked on Justice League, you worked on King Arthur, you worked on Fantastic Beasts. What the fuck? Mm-hmm. You worked on Bridget Jones, Tarzan. Mm-hmm. Come on. Mm-hmm. Conjuring 2, Stag, Luther.
The new Kingsman movie as well. I think that one was at the top. So
New Kingsman? Yep.
Yeah, the Kingsman. It's the third one.
The Kingsman,
In the Kingsman thing. Yeah.
So,
And it was Zack Snyder's Justice League I worked on, not the other one.
I was about to say, so you didn't work on the Whedon, the Justice League. You worked on the ZS League, okay?
Yeah, because the Snyder one was the one before. We did that, and then we wrapped on it, and then they called back for reshoots. But I was doing something else, so you know, I didn't go back to it. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah,
and I'm not even credited on that movie because obviously it's 95% of it is like so I didn't get a credit. And then,
are you on Zach's though?
That's the annoying thing. They use the same credits.
The same credits.
I was actually a little bit upset about that because I like looked at it. It's like they've just copy and pasted the credits. That's really annoying.
That is. I mean, that's a superhero movie. That's fucking. That's crazy. That's awesome.
I got to blow up the Batmobile a little bit, so it was fine. You know,
shut the fuck up, really?
And a little bit. It wasn't blow up. It was. Do a little bit of pyro on it, but it was fun, you know.
Yeah, but just to work near the Batmobile.
There's something we won't tell why.
Cool
though.
Yeah, I had another job, so I had to turn down House of the Dragon. Yeah.
So then let me ask you. So you've probably it's fair to say that you've worked on a few independent shoots, then, right?
One.
Yeah,
just only
he's
one.
He's mainly done.
Oh, okay. That's amazing. Yeah. Okay, so how do you?
Free.
And you did, yeah. That sounds about right.
I was a fan of the YouTubers that were doing the movie, and I just offered because I'd done three movies back to back, and I went on holiday to Thailand, came back, and I saw a tweet from one of these guys. It's like, they're doing a movie. Well, I kind of work in movies. I kind of reached out being like a little bit weird because like I watched this guy for like 10 years on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like just because they had like a game chasing show. And I found it very, very entertaining. And I used to watch them all the time. And yeah, I just offered my services up and they were like, oh, well, we can't afford you. And it's like, because obviously I think they check my IMDb and and I just said, well, I'll do it for free. And it's like, just pay for my flights and accommodation. And they couldn't spring for the flight. So I had to pay for my own flight as well.
Wow.
but they did get the accommodation, the catering, which actually, you know, the catering was pretty good. I mean, especially when it was like the barbecue and stuff like that. Big fan of barbecue.
Oh yeah,
but a lot of the stuff that I would have liked to have gotten there, obviously some of it was out of budget and stuff like that. But I managed to get some bits in. Couldn't use a lot of the stuff I wanted to use because obviously restricted for money. I had no budget myself. Basically, any budget I had to ask art department. And art department were like, well, we've kind of spent all our budget. So it's like, right, okay. So I actually had the first got me a smoke machine that was from his Halloween gear or stuff like that. Like he'd used it in Halloween, like outside his house or something. And I was like, right, this will kind of work. And it's like the element inside it. Because obviously with the smoke machine, you've got a liquid and you're trying to get to a smoke point. So obviously you've got to get to the certain wattage to get to that smoke point to get it heated. But as soon as you start putting smoke through, it's going to cool it down. And then at that point, the element cools back down. And it's like, and I'll have the first just saying to me, it's like, okay, more smoke. He's like, yep, it's going to be like 5 minutes. Like, well, we're ready to go. It's like, it's your smoke machine, dude.
Well, it's more faster.
Yeah. And it's like, don't blame me. This is your kit.
Yeah.
but it worked out. It was, it was what was in the budget. It was absolutely fine. Managed to go out and get a fan to break up the smoke and stuff like that. And it's, I mean, I was more surprised that
how it turned out.
When I even brought up the smoke, I know it was Billy's first feature.
Yes,
but it was like, why do we need smoke inside? And I was like, you always need smoke inside. And so,
he didn't know, right?
Yeah, that's just I just sort of said as, oh, okay, I mean I believe it's to like soften the lens and like give it a bit of depth and so on. I was like, I'm trying to work out, it's like, why did we do this
again? I guess a lot of people who watch movies may not know, because a lot of times doing what we call atmosphere atmo is not,
I was about to say that,
things, yeah, not, it's not to create something that looks sourcey or like it obviously, oh, like if your car gets hit then smoke comes out, but smoke is used to dissipate light basically. Yeah. And so only when you have smoke can you see rays of light, and DPs love that look.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you are in movies, it is surprising. It was surprising to me when I first saw it.
It makes it easier to see. Yeah.
It's to give the element of daylight and stuff like that. Basically it's something to capture the audience's eye, really. That's what they really want to see. And you would backlight smoke. And then you'll just put, you can even put in a little bit and you will just see all these little beams.
The rays of light.
But you wait for the smoke to settle and it will just hang. But basically, I'm saying smoke. Smoke is technically the wrong term because it's haze.
It's haze,
Because haze hangs because it's water-based, which is glycerin and, you know, it was propylene glycol. And your exterior is your smoke, which is usually cracked oil. So that's technically smoke.
Yeah,
but people will just say interior smoke. You know, same sort of thing, but not really.
Yeah,
if you want to be really boring and technical about it.
No, well, it's not boring because what people don't understand is that most interiors kind of depend on that just to show the lights and give the DP a little more like creative room to play with lights and whatnot, you know.
Exactly, and that's the thing. We're a visual medium. That's what film is. It's like, it is there for your eyes. You're meant to be watching stuff. What's going on? Yes, obviously you're going to be following the story. You're going to be listening to the character and stuff like that. But it's always nice to have a fire flickering out of focus in the background. You know, a little bit of light beams coming in when you're going through a creepy building or stuff like that. It's all sorts of things like that. That's us. That's us.
Yeah. So that being said, Leon, do you like the independent world of film, or have you been traumatized by what you've experienced and you're like, I'm going to take a break from the indie world?
No, I've got no problem with the independent world at all. I mean, obviously it definitely helps when you've got an unlimited budget. Of course, why wouldn't it?
Yeah, if a bottomless pit exists, yeah.
Yeah, I mean I've worked on things where I mean, with the budget for special effects alone is £6 million. It's like, we can do that. Of course we can do that. Is it? Yeah, exactly. It's like, and it's a running joke in the UK where if you're on not a massive, but even a big budget thing like 10 million, stuff like that, and you'll ask for something and the budget isn't there for it. And the running joke is that they'll go, oh, it's not the bond. You're not on the bond. It's like, because the bond gets an unlimited budget. No, it's as much money as you want. It's like, you want that? Course, you can have five. It's a kind of a running joke because the bond just doesn't have a budget.
It shows too. And it also shows in how the movie has been a little, you know, there's just like that, a little too much. a little too much freedom doesn't really go a long way in terms of the creative space, especially for Bond.
I mean, I love some of the Bond films, and especially some of the special effects. I mean, it's with I've never actually worked for him personally, but Chris Corbord, he's basically the top guy in probably the world, but I mean definitely in the UK. And he has done like the big ones, like most of the Nolan stuff. You know, it's like you talk Inception, you talk Star Wars. This is all Chris Corbord. It's like most of the Marvel films, and actually his brother does stuff as well, Paul Corbord, and then you've got Neil Corbord. They do like Marvel films and stuff like this, but they're all very very good at what they do, and there's a lot of bigger supervisors. Well, not bigger super, but there's a lot of big supervisors as well. That I broke my teeth on the industry to get in with, and I've come up through that, and I've worked with quite a lot of people over the years, and so it's definitely eye opening. There are people out there that definitely don't get the recognition that special effects I think used to get, because I mean household names like Stan Winston and Rick Baker and Ray Harryhausen and all that sort of thing. You know
Greg Nicotero,
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, Greg. Yeah, Walking Dead's fantastic, but
I mean,
but
it's like, phenomenal.
But it's completely different special effects to what it is today, especially in the UK, because special effects is a different thing. I mean, it still is special effects, but we have prosthetic departments,
right?
Special effects makeup that's nothing to do with us. So it's very sectioned.
Yes,
it's like, we will collaborate.
Is it more sectioned in the US versus the UK?
I think it's more sectioned in the UK. I think you guys basically you're more under the same umbrella.
Yeah.
Whereas we are very separate.
Oh.
So it's like we are, which is fine. I mean, special effects makeup goes more under hair and makeup.
Right.
Yeah.
Than it does under special effects.
Definitely. Yeah.
And prosthetics will have their own department.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they're not really part of special effects either. So. And again, that would also fall under hair and makeup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess define, because I asked this question, it was something I learned today, the difference between something that would be fall under special effects makeup versus special effects in general.
Sorry, say that again.
What's the difference? What makes something special effects makeup versus just your department?
Special effects makeup would be like, say, like you were talking earlier about the American Werewolf in London transformation. Rick Baker, genius, fantastic. Genius. One of the best transformations of all time. And it's like 40, 50 years old, however long ago that was.
Really? Still can't be. I thought it was like 30, 40. Oh, yeah, no, you're right. It is 50.
Yeah,
it has to be.
It's going back. Yeah, it's going back. But and it still hasn't really been matched because it's physical.
No. I
mean, it's using camera trickery to speed stuff up, but it's still physical. And it's like, and it looks fantastic. And it just hasn't been beaten. And you can't do that sort of stuff. But what we would particularly do is like, we could look at other stuff today that is the same transformation and monster makeup and all that sort of thing. It's really not what a special effects person would do. Like I imagine if The Walking Dead was done in the UK, let's do that as an example, we wouldn't touch the zombies. Nothing to do with us.
I was about to ask. Okay. So
we wouldn't go anywhere near, unless someone shot a zombie. We'd do the bullet hit.
Okay.
We wouldn't do the blood effects around it. But we do the blood bag inside with the
squibs. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to explain more, but I'm not also not going to explain how to do a bullet on.
No. Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to. Yeah.
But yeah. Squib is the easiest way of saying it. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, So for independent shoots, like I'd imagine, since going back to what you said, it's like even though it's limited, it's almost like forces creativity within that moment. Does that feel like is that like a particular like good challenge for you to have, or is that something that's just like, yeah, well, I'd like to do it on my off time and then, you know, do
it's definitely
Zack
fun.
Snyder Justice League effects.
No, you know what I mean? I went out there. It was an experience. I said that I was basically treating it as a holiday or vacation for you Americans.
Well, Christine made a documentary on her vacation. I mean, she's out of her mind. Like, she makes a whole entire narrative. I'm like, you're on vacation.
Well, but that's what I mean. I said the way I was convincing myself was like, right, okay, I'll come out, I'll do the movie, But on the days that I'm not working, I'll sightsee, I'll go around and stuff like that, which yeah. It turned out I think I was needed every day apart from one. So I couldn't really do that. And we were doing 6 days on something. We were doing 6 day shoots.
It was 6 days.
And you Americans do 12 hour days, which no, in the UK, we do French hours, which is continuous days. Continuous. We do continuous and semi-continuous, which is like 10 hours, 10 and a half hours. So you get more work done. You don't take an hour lunch because it's like, well, do you want an hour lunch unpaid? Because the hour lunch is unpaid. Mm. Or do you want to go home earlier? And it's like, go home earlier.
Go home earlier. Yeah,
it's interesting because from an AD perspective, when I do French hours, it drives people up the wall. Like I get camera department getting mad at me and all this other stuff because they can't. Because
they're hangry.
Okay, they're hangry. Well, because they always have to be by the camera all the time and there's no like official break.
Yeah, but legally you have to have 20 minutes for lunch anyway.
That's how they get.
Mm-hmm. So legally everybody has to stop for 20 minutes for lunch anyway.
Mm.
So that we get 20 minutes regardless. So it doesn't matter. But they call it a running lunch, but you're meant to have 20 minutes. So it's not a set time where everybody downs tools. It'll be like, oh, someone's stopping for like 20 minutes to have lunch. So really, say for instance, first camera is wanting his lunch. He would generally ask someone to go get his lunch when the DOP is getting the gaffer to set up the next shot. So they'll be
okay. So preoccupied with something else. And yeah. Then
so he may even be sat on the camera still. Like he'll be on the dolly and he'll just be eating his lunch.
But it's a working lunch.
But he's technically on his break. Yeah. Right. It's like right. So. And no one should really ask him to come off of it for 20 minutes. It will happen.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I've tried implementing it in like
it's I imagine it's difficult. I mean, especially I've seen so many ADs get chewed out. Yep. And it's just like
usually it's the camera department that yells at me.
I could never be an AD. It's hard. It looks hard.
I was getting in trouble. They're like, well, you know, like I don't get to we're with cameras, we never get to leave, so like we shouldn't have and I'm like I'm not the one who said to do, like, this is the producer saying to do French hours, and don't you remember you guys have to leave earlier, you know, that nobody gives a shit, they just, you know what I mean,
or you'll get the sparks that I imagine that they as cheeky in the US as they are in the UK. Normally, they'll be the ones loud. So the electrical department, the sparks, they'll be like talking really loud when people are rehearsing inside and stuff like that. And the ADs, so you'll get the sparks just turn around and go,
and then
they'll purposely make noise so it just to wind the AD up. And a lot of people will do that on purpose. It's like, you are an asshole. It's like, but you just see it so much, It's not usually to the ADs because the ADs are normally seasoned. It's normally to the PAs. It's like,
Because I've had that where I'm like, okay, let's lock it up. And PA being like, they will not shut up.
Yeah.
Like,
whereas the ADs will shut it down. It will be like, you will shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
And, it's like, and then he's
absolutely.
Like, okay. And it's like, if you don't, I'll go to the first.
Yeah.
And he'll go to your boss.
Exactly. It's like, yeah. So somebody's going to get in trouble either way. Yeah,
exactly. So it's like, but then throughout, it's like that AD then becomes like not a pariah, but it's almost like, don't say anything. Sometimes it's just not worth it.
It
looks hard to be an AD, basically.
It is.
And that's not to say that all G&E does that. Like G&E, there's some really nice G&E that will treat their ADs, you know, with respect. But yeah, I have seen that before, but I've seen it more where camera and G&E would be like on the same walkie channel. And they would just like talk mad shit on everybody. So they'll have their own like separate channel and they'll just be like, all right, so let's go ahead and make something up for the PA to do or some shit like that, you know, just to mess with them.
Well, you know, we have our own channel, which a lot of people don't tend to fuck around on it. You know, it is what it is. It's like, but so, sometimes people will, but you know. But usually it's like if you're on channel one or stuff like that, which I usually turn off channel one, even if I'm actually meant to be on there.
I'll tune it out sometimes too.
There's too much noise on it.
It's a lot. Noise.
Yeah, and I just get a headache. So it's but the one thing I do like is if I hear like one AD will be like, Oh, so-and-so go to two.
Yep.
And there's everybody offset.
And then they're like,
Everybody like, goes to two.
Yeah, that's it. It's like, what are they talking about?
It's like a conference call that no one knows they're part of.
Absolutely. It's the least private conversation you will
have. Oh, yeah, totally. If
you have something super confidential, you should not switch to two.
You should
freaking switches to two.
Basically, have set it on one. It would probably reach less people.
So I've done PA gigs, and there was one AD who was worried about that all the time. And he would always tell me, he would like to tell PA Nation, which is like, you know, the three or four PAs that work in that production. And they would tell him, it's like, okay, when we want to have a private conversation, we're going to go to channel 5. And then we're like, okay, sure. And then we would go to channel 5, but nobody would remember. And they would just say, oh, can you switch to 2? Because nobody would just remember. And you just see the fucking first AD just have an absolute meltdown because everyone is trying to tune a channel 2, but literally he said, hey, everybody go to channel 5. So it's just me and this AD. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm here. I don't understand like the. I don't understand why everybody's like when you're in a production. I understand like you want to have your own separate like conversation, but like for the gall to for some of these people be like, you know what? It's going to eavesdrop on their conversations. Like I'm going to fuck around and do that. I will be a liar to say I haven't done that. I definitely have done that, but
I've done it too.
But you know, it's like, it's one of those things where it's just like, why play that? I mean, you know, but also for those of you who don't know, Channel 1 is like, everything. It's like a city hall.
Traffic.
It's just it's just everybody talking, everybody's laughing, everybody's like, you know, playing music or some shit, you know. So usually you go that to have like a quiet channel, but it's wild the etiquette here, especially walkie etiquette and the unspoken rules too, that only applies between like, let's say, camera department or like, you know, G&E to go for a safety meeting. You know what I mean? Like they always have something, you know.
I'm generally pretty good on the camera. Not on the camera, sorry. I'm generally pretty good on the radio. But
I'm not good on the radio.
I mean like professional, you know. It's like I won't really fuck around.
Oh, so right. Like, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But I have been known to work cuz I ran a job a year or so ago. And nobody's my boss on set. I am my boss. So it's like I would turn on the radio to greet the rest of the special effects people. And I'd turn it on. And I don't know if you're familiar with Rage Against the Machine.
I love Rage. Yeah.
Gorilla Radio. So I started singing Gorilla Radio. I was like, turn that shit up. And it's like, hello, people. How the fuck are you doing? and I just hear back, sorry, who's this? And I was like, and I was on one.
You're on one.
I was not on the special effects channel, and I just replied, you will never know, and just turned it straight off and said like, no, and I just banned myself from the radio for the whole day. I was like, just come speak to me because I'm not going back on the radio just in case anybody recognizes my voice.
I would throw my walkie in the trash. She'll be like, I don't know.
I even heard a couple of hours later, I was like, who was that earlier? I was like, no.
I swear I heard Gorilla Radio. Was it you? Mm-hmm. What?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It still would have got in trouble. So, but I think the same day actually, I had nothing to do, and like because everything had been set up, so I just went and got a coffee. And obviously, craft services, and I just went straight over and I was like, yeah, I'll have a coffee. And then called up my mate and I was like, do you want a coffee? He's like, yeah, I'll have coffee. So I two coffees in. And it's like, and then all of a sudden this queue had swarmed behind me. And I just turned around and we'd only just started the show. So I thought, you know, I'll break the ice a little bit. And I just turned around and I could see the person at the end of the queue was getting a bit antsy. And I was like, oh, sorry, mate, it's going to be a while. I've just ordered 45 coffees. For fuck's sake. And just stormed off. And I was like, I was fucking joking. I've got two. It's like, Jesus, have a sense of humor. So sometimes people just don't get sarcasm, especially in the morning. I need to watch my mouth sometimes.
No, well, that's the thing, though. I do the same shit. When that happened, was that a PA who was behind you?
He had a tray, so it was either a PA or a trainee for a department. But basically, he was very upset.
Early in the morning, and a PA is just there, and he's just like lugging coffee around. Yeah, I guess you would just you would not want to be fucked with. But at the same time, you can let loose. Like, you know, if I was him, I would laugh. I would absolutely.
Well, if you give me shit back and just say that would have been fine as well. You know, as just looking for something wrong, but to storm off, it was like, okay, pick those toys up. Someone spat his dummy out of the pram.
Then you have to do the, all right, I'm sorry. Okay, it was a joke. Oh,
no,
it's fine.
No chance. No, I didn't apologize.
No? Oh, okay. I'm that guy. Every time I say something and like the AD looks at me weird, like I'll just say a joke, or I'll like say a movie quote. Mm. And he won't know absolutely what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm talking about Saul. And when I would say something to him, he would just not have a response. Although we would make those same references, you know, beforehand. So I just look like an asshole and an idiot just standing there. It's just like I'm saying this joke, especially over walking on Channel One, and there's just no response. I'm just like, oh man, I'm gonna kill myself. I'm just gonna fucking take this van right off the road.
See, that sounds like something I would do just on purpose, to just be like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
And then somebody, another PA came by, was like, was that you on the radio? I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah, what do you mean?
That's good. That's funny. I actually used to work with a guy who was, he was a morning person. It was on Justice League, actually, that every morning, 7 o'clock without fail, he'd be like, on the radio, full blast. Family, how we doing? Everybody is like, wow. Oh, shut the fuck.
That's a little crazy.
But he's like, shut up. Oh, it's so early.
That's too much energy. Sometimes, like in the morning, it's fine to be medium energy.
I can't say that. I was going to say something else. I was going to say something else.
To talk about some of the, without naming specific productions, if you're not.
It's probably no, the Christine.
The worst conditions you've had to work under.
Probably it'd be very easy to work out if I did say what it was. So it's like, okay. But you know what it is.
I know what it is.
It's going to be hard to say without getting myself cancelled or something. So
yes, like... okay, no cancellation for Leon.
I mean, I could talk about some bits. It's just not bad stuff.
No, you know,
it's
like, yeah, it doesn't.
Not that there's any bad stuff. Anybody out there listening is definitely no bad stuff. No, the film industry is very good.
They treat all their workers right.
Yes. There's no bad stuff.
No, we love the industry. It's like we talk about on the podcast. It's been, I mean, you know, it's been over 100 episodes, and we talk about like the people that piss us off for sure, and we vent, and we talk about like, you know, the thing that is just like very specific to to film culture. So sometimes we're probably isolating a few of our audiences who have no idea what the film industry actually entails. But go ahead.
I was going to say, you try and say something bad about the film industry. So the worst thing about the film industry is when it's just like, I love the film industry.
I love it. I love 14-hour days. Yeah. I love having overtime. I love reshoots. I love it all. Yeah.
Overtime.
Well, no, not. I mean, yes.
Wow. Yeah, overtime?
Wow. No, I wouldn't do overtime if I didn't get overtime money. You need to get paid for it. That's why it's called overtime.
I don't even know if we get overtime. I don't even know if that's true. I don't even know if I got overtime. You're supposed to, but I haven't even calculated on my checks sometimes. I'm just like,
did I even go?
We get the producer will come around to our department and they'll ask us if we can do overtime.
Yeah.
And it's quite proper, really. You know, it's like you go around and be like, hi guys, we're gonna have to go over an hour, is that okay? You know, it might be two.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's fine, you know, you've asked. But when they just do it without asking, it's we'll still do it, but it's
shitty.
It doesn't go down as well. Yeah, it doesn't go down as well. So yeah,
and kind of look like
I've
an asshole.
I've seen it before where not our department, but I have seen a department just decide no, we're not doing it, and they'll walk off, and then the first is at dinner and go,
okay, well,
that's a wrap then, because we can't do it without them.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I've seen it happen. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I mean,
oh, go ahead.
I know. I was just saying that. Well, when you're in this industry, you know the ones who are just trying to push their luck and trying to take advantage of people's understanding. So after a few times when it happens, then it ceases to be shit like this just happened and we're sorry type thing. Like we don't mean this. It becomes we expect this from you.
Yeah, that's it. It becomes like they'll ask it and then they won't ask it and they just keep not asking because they just don't say anything.
So, right. That's the issue. I think people are, for the most part, if they feel like the production is going out of their way to make people comfortable and stuff, hey, one day we go overtime, it's like, sure, no,
not that big of a deal.
Because like it, but if it's like the problem is like, that's why there are these rules to protect production, our people and crews, because if the issue is some of these productions have literally factored in going overtime and throwing money at it. And so it becomes I expect you to go overtime type thing without a courtesy.
Yeah, but then you've got to take turnaround into time. Because if you don't, if you don't do turnaround, then sure. Yeah, so, which I've been on a production before where they've paid the turnaround, but then I've had 4 hours sleep, and I made a lot of money out of it, but I'm not.
You only
very
got
good
a couple hours of sleep,
and that's the issue. Yeah,
I'm not very good for the rest of the day, and I'm dealing with fire and stuff all day, and it's like, this is not fun.
Maybe I should get a full night's sleep. If I
exactly. So it can be definitely counterproductive for sure. It's like. And it's not like a lot of the time you'll even have a choice. It's like sometimes it's just, well, no, you have to.
You
it's
have
like,
to do it. Yeah.
Okay. Right. I'll do it. But I mean, it's, you know, you ask me at the last hour of the next day, like to do something, I'm going to be looking at you like a zombie. I'm like, I don't.
What
even
are
know
you
what
talking about? Yeah,
exactly. It's like I've had 3 hours sleep.
Yeah.
Because of I don't know if it's the same over there, but they will take into account they're meant to, but they usually don't. They'll do turnaround from when you officially wrap to when you officially start.
That's about
right.
If
you want to get there for breakfast, you've got to get there an hour early anyway, so it's like, so that's 10 hours straight away, and then your travel time, and if your hotel's 45 minutes away, that's an hour and a half, and it's and the hours is just ticking down and down and down. I've seen some people actually have to sleep on a set before because there's just no point in them going back.
Yeah, we should have done. One of my worst set experiences was a union, was my first and pretty much only union experience, because I was a PA, I was non-union, so they worked us to the bone. And I remember finishing at 2 a.m. and then having to be on set at 4 a.m.
Yeah. That turnaround it's illegal.
It's fucking legal. Yeah, but they did it. Yeah.
Because if you're non-union, we can take all of the advantage of you.
Because we were non-union, nobody would care if we reported it or anything.
That doesn't make sense. I mean, we have non-union people in the UK that work on union stuff. It's but they still have the same rights.
Same rules apply to them.
The union is there to back their corner.
Right.
And I mean, you have to pay your dues and stuff.
That's the thing.
But the union's there to help people.
Sure, but that's the thing is that because you're non-union and we're paying you for your overtime or whatever, like you have to them, you've signed away your rights because we're paying you for your time. Which is bullshit, basically. So it was an awful, awful experience, and apparently that happens quite a lot.
One of my first gigs on a... Oh, go ahead, Leon. Sorry.
No. It wasn't anything relevant. So
No, but what I was going to say is I had a similar thing, but like I was an art department assistant and it was like one of my very first sets. And we traveled to Leander, I want to say, which is like hours away from Austin. And I had to, there was like bungalows that other people can stay in, but I chose to stay in my car and sleep in my car because I went to one of those bungalows and like I opened up one of the sheets and just like a bunch of bugs just started scattering across the bed. And I was like, well, I'm going to sleep in my car. So fuck this. And then I'm not going to out who it is, but someone who I worked with in the art department was like, hey, since you're parked, you can bring your car closer to set. We have some things you can paint. So how about you put in a fresh coat? You can sleep in for like maybe 30 minutes. So, you know, you don't have to go be there and call time. But it turned out that like I needed to be there and call time anyways, because I needed to prep a lot of shit. So that art department person, again, I won't say who, kind of was just like playing this game of just like, hey, I'll scratch your back, you're gonna scratch mine, and you go ahead and paint this thing. So I stayed up all night with like two coats of paint in like three separate hours. And I probably got a total of like an hour and a half of sleep. And it that is just like, and I couldn't, and I didn't say anything, but I knew it was fucked up. Like I knew it was fucked up, but like it had to be done. There was like no time. And our call time was insane, and we had no prep at all. Like just no time, period, you know, unless we were sleeping.
A lot of people will try and make something your problem just so they don't have to do it.
It's incredible.
I remember clear as day. So not to be like, I've got a story like that, you know, but it's like, I was a trainee back at the time. So it's like, but it was like, oh, okay. Well, it's lunch. And it's like, yeah, mate, but I need you to go out and get this. And it's like, right. But
I'm sorry.
I'll do it after lunch. And right. It's like, well, no, we need it now. So just have your lunch when you get back. So it's like, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. So when I got back, it was, you know, it's like lunch finished. So it's like our lunch. So I'd got back, I'd got everything, I'd done my job, and I went into the tea room to have my lunch, and my main boss came in and said, what the fuck are you doing in here? And he's like, I'm having my lunch. And it's like, it's not fucking lunchtime. Lunchtime was an hour ago. And so, yeah, but I just like, get the fuck out now and get back to work before you're fired.
Oh my God. It's just like,
So there's no explaining. It's like just no way to explain it. And it's like just no lunch for the day. Then it's like, brilliant. So you know, I mean, it's silly things like that just happen. In theory, I should have just gone off somewhere and just hid for an hour somewhere else. It's like, well, I'm taking my lunch. So it's like, but then you get people constantly calling you. And it's like, where are you? Where are you? You're meant to be here. And it's like, well, I'm on my lunch. So like, no lunch. Yeah, it's
right.
And then you've got to then say, well, this guy said, and it's like, well, this guy isn't technically your boss, and you know, all sorts of things. It's like, yeah, so a lot of things can mess you up when you're just starting out in the industry very easily. So.
Yeah, and that person who told me to, it's funny you mentioned that, because the person who told me was the art director who told me to just stay up and then do the coats of paint and shit like overnight. And it wasn't until like the wrap party when I told the production designer, and he was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I'm like, well, I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal. And he was like, no, that is a big deal. Like, that's insane. Like, you're entitled to sleep. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, okay. I don't know.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's the thing. When you say, he's like, all right, so we're meant to work 19 hours a day. Okay. That's weird for sure.
I didn't know any better.
Film industry. Yay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's for a passion.
Yeah, that's it. It's like you're doing it because you love it, not because you want money, right? Right? Right.
And
yeah,
isn't it great telling people outside of the film industry when you do shit like this? And then they're like, how do you not want to die? It's just like, how are you doing this? And you're just like, yeah, no, this is fun. It's like, well, it is fun. Like, you don't get it. Like, you need to be there.
A lot of people will say, like people who aren't in industry, they'll be like, oh wow, you work on films. And I'm like, yeah,
it's exotic. It's like, right,
that sounds amazing. Do you enjoy it? Do you love it? And I'm like, no.
And it's, dude, it just I gotta start like saying
you,
that
yeah it just seems like you just break the world. But I'm not I don't hate it. You know, it's a job. You know, it's my job. I'm good at my job. Yeah. But I mean, do I love long hours, not knowing if I'm going to finish for that day or I'm going to be on for an extra 3 months because they've messed something up in the schedule, or, you know, or all sorts of things like this. It's like, I don't particularly like the unpredictability of it, mm-hmm. but I enjoy being able to choose when I work. You know, I could particularly do a couple of films or one film if it's a particularly long production for 6 months. And if I feel like it, I can take 6 months off. You know, and it's like, what other job can you do that in? No, you can't. It's like, you know, right. what? I'm going to go out to Texas for a month because I feel like it. And it's like, right. someone will call me up and be like, oh, can you do this job? It's like, oh, I'll be back in a month.
Right.
You know, yeah. if you need me then, yeah, sure.
You know, yeah, it's taking the schedule back in your hands. Yeah.
Yeah. I choose when I go on something, you know, and it's like, I mean, it's nice when someone calls you up and offers you something. And usually I will take it because I don't particularly like not working. I get bored very easily. Like, I'll do a massive long job. I'll be miserable. I'll be so tired, wanting to come home all the time, and I'll have 4 days off and I'll be like, oh, I need to get back on a job again.
Yeah.
four days is usually.
Yeah. Christine talked about it. That. Yeah. We've definitely brought that up. Yeah.
Yeah. We're all like that. Yeah. We're.
That's my limit. Four days. Be, four yeah. days for me. What was it? Is it 3 days, a week, maybe? Is that...
I think I can. It's a now week. I can do a week.
You can do a week. Yeah. Four days is my limit. That's it.
Yeah. I can. Now I can do like a week. Because for me now, ADing is no longer my main goal.
Well, you're directors.
So, right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so now when I have time off, then it's like time for me to focus on what I actually want to do, right. which is directing. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's a good and bad thing about it. So because it was never like my main goal. I got into ADing so that I could direct. However, I also wanted to be very good at anything that I do. So yeah. I still wanted to do a fucking good job as an AD, right? Hmm. But the more that I wanted to be a director, the less I gave a shit about stuff, which is good because then I was better at saying no to bullshit.
Well, I mean, not shitting on the AD department at all because they do good work. And yeah. Without them, the industry couldn't run.
Yeah. Right.
But the AD department is used as a stepping stone to a lot of other departments. Right. The same as locations. Yeah. You know, a lot of people will go into particular locations department produce, where you can do stuff. Of course you can do stuff. I mean, it's a job. It needs to be done. But it's like you can walk into it. You can learn it. You might not be the best at it, but you can do the job moderately competently, and then you can decide that you want to go to a more, not in a bad way, but a more specialized or technical department. You know, so sure. say, oh, I actually like the look of the camera department. You know, you go over and you'll speak to someone about camera, maybe get on as a second AC or just like a runner or whatever. And the same with special effect. We've had people come in from locations. We've had people come in and you know, just come on. We've had security guards that are like, oh, that looks good. And it's like, well, you're
really
a strong guy. You can carry gas bottles. So yeah, go for it. It's like, we'll give you a trial. You know, that's
okay.
It's like, yeah. It sounds like an exclusive industry where you can only get in.
It's not.
If you know the right people and stuff like that, but it really isn't. It definitely depends on who you speak to. Sure. Which happens in every walk of life.
Yes.
But I think that it's not as exclusive as people like to think. It's like, oh, I'll never work in the film industry. It's like, you can, you just need to sort of.
You may not work at the exact job that you want,
sure,
but you can get in and figure out from that job how to pivot.
Yeah, just because you can't immediately get into being a DOP or stuff like that. It's like, well, I've used a camera before. Why aren't I a DOP? It's like, well, maybe if you go into like ADs or locations or I don't know, even props or stuff like that, you know, anything like that. You could start in that and then you could just
move over
a different department. You speak to them, you say, oh, well, have you got any openings? No, we haven't on this one. Okay, well, maybe on the next one. And you'll do that job and you'll do the whole job and then you'll go on to the next one and maybe you'll see that person again. Oh, do you have anybody on this? Oh, yeah, you know what? Maybe I could use someone. It's like, and you pick things up, you'll be around them. You'll be like, oh, do you want this lead? Oh, that's a so-and-so lead. It's like, oh, right, okay, and you remember it. And, you know, those sort of things and you'll like hand it to someone.
Yeah.
Or you'll overhear that they need it and you'll go out and you'll get it and you'll give it to them. And he's like, oh, okay. An AD has just handed me the right lead that I need. Thank you. But yeah, it's
and you're helping me? Okay.
I've seen things work like that and it does work out.
Yeah. But I guess the good thing is the more you know that you're good at your job, mm-hmm. the more you're better at walking away when things are wrong mm-hmm. and stuff. So now before I probably would have taken more shit, but because something else has taken precedent, I won't take shit anymore, like to be better at aiding or taking one for the team, yeah. stuff like that. So I don't know where I was going on with this, but like
choosing your own path in directing. Yeah.
And directing is like where I want to go. So now when like a production is like, oh, well, we're paying you, so you have to go on these millions of location scouts that don't affect the schedule. I'm like, no, like that's time away from what I actually want to do. And so, yeah. So I guess my whole thing is like, at a certain point, I don't want more money, like more, like I yeah. want the time, you know? So yours is 4 days. Mine is like, oh, I now treat time off as time that I can actually spend on what I want
right.
to do.
Whereas I'm just lazy with my 4 days.
Well, we all need to be lazy at some point too, in one way or another.
I'll just go back and go on my Xbox or something. So.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with that. Also, too, the new Star Wars video game trailer came out, and I'm fucking excited for that. So we're just, you know.
That was being streamed at like 2 a.m. and I was
the video game awards. You mean? Yeah,
in the UK. Yeah, I was trying to stay up to watch it, but I caught a little bit, and I just thought that Elden Ring would get like voted number one because I hate that game with a passion. I hate it. But I played 140 hours and I completed it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
I hate it, but it's the best game. One of the best games I've ever played.
Oh, it's.
But I hate it.
It's the best game of the decade, but yeah,
when the DLC comes out, I will play that.
I'm taking a break.
I beat Melina and everything, you know. It's like,
really?
So
I needed to take a mental health break with the with the Elden Ring. It was getting to the point where I was like, listen, I know it's been 10 hours. I'm supposed to do other shit, but if I just beat this one boss, it will make my fucking month. I promise it will make my month. And then I can't beat it, and all I want to do is just bite my controller in half.
I think there's only one achievement I haven't got on Elden Ring.
Oh, and it's just is that like a forgotten thing now? You just can't.
It's to beat it three times, and I beat it once.
Oh,
and
to be honest,
I could beat the other storylines because I'd already done all the story. This is getting completely off track. Sorry,
but we digress. Let's go.
I'd already done the storylines to get like the best endings and stuff like that. But I decided that I just didn't want to fight. I won't spoil who the last boss is if you haven't got there, but I didn't want to fight the last boss again because the last boss is a pain.
Oh, no, I beat it. Yeah. No, I'm finished. Yeah. So
I didn't want to fight Radagon again. I had to cheese him. I had to take all my armor off, which glitches him. You take all your armor off and YouTube this. If you take all your armor off, because I just couldn't beat him, this is fucking bullshit. If you take all your armor off and you get it's like this weird, it's like a magician weapon because it's blue, but it's really low powered. And you take all your armor off and you just hit him once every 15 to 20 seconds, he won't move, and you can't stagger him. And I think it took me about 20 minutes to beat him, but you kill him. And Elden Beast is a walkover.
I just go strength and dex build, and I'm just like, I'm going to fucking maul these motherfuckers. I don't care. I just want to get through it. Radagon.
140 hours.
I didn't see my clock, but if I saw it, I'd probably be depressed. If I saw how much time I clocked in at that game, it would be bad.
I spent less time playing a video game in lockdown that I got a world record on than I did playing Elden Ring.
Are you serious? A world record on what?
Tell them what. I'm going to tell them what
it's just an old arcade game.
So oh, like okay. Gotcha. Oh, yeah, so you do like speed runs and stuff like that.
I've got an 80% and 100% record on the same game, but I'm not a speedrunner. It was
gotcha. Okay.
I got the points world record on it during lockdown because I was really bored.
And, gotcha.
And it's a game I grew up playing. Not to take anything away from it, but it's like I grew up playing it and I started playing it, and then all of a sudden I was in the top 10. It's like, oh. And I just started to grind it. I started to play it a lot. And I got the top spot. I got number one. I beat the previous world record holder by a few hundred thousand.
And you streamed it?
Yeah, streamed it. It was on my Twitch.
Wow.
And it was, the world record had to be done because I actually broke it, and then I submitted it to Twin Galaxies, which is the online official leaderboard for world records.
Right.
And they wouldn't accept it because I did it on an Astro City Mini. So it's like, because Wonder Boy is on the Astro City. It's an original Sega game from 1986.
Yeah.
I did it on the Astro City Mini, and they wouldn't accept it. So I had to do it on MAME. But there's a thing called Wolf MAME, which it's all sorts of things like that. There's a thing called INP or something. It's basically to stop any form of cheating. It's like, so they can look into the code to check.
So put a chastity, and if it basically doesn't, if you do anything, it will basically show what cheats you're using and stuff. Okay.
Exactly. So I played it, and there was a delay. So there was a bit of lag of maybe not quite a sec, maybe 2/3 of a second.
Hmm.
So even then, as a platformer, that was a pain in the ass to play because that's that. And my controller buttons were back to front. So it was like, even that, I was at a massive disadvantage and I still broke the world record. So I'm quite happy about that. So
yeah.
Anyway, going completely
off. So going back to film.
So stop talking about video games. No one's here for video games.
Question. What's your favorite medium in special effects? Like fire or... I don't know.
Mm. I like doing fire effects. I mean, smoke is basically special effects bread and butter. It really is. It's like it's what.
But is that your favorite though?
No, it's not my favorite. I'm happy to do it. I can do it, sure. Yeah. But I like doing flame effects. Definitely. I mean, flame bars are very, very simple to use. Practical fires, all sorts of things.
So pyro is your first love.
And- no, pyro is different. Pyro is like your explosion and stuff like that. I will do pyrotechnics.
Yeah.
But I am not egotistical enough to think that I am clever enough to do pyro on my own completely and not kill myself.
Mm.
You know, it's like I will. I mean, I have because we have, it's not licenses in the UK, but it's like accreditation. You know, you go on courses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I have a course which says, you know, I'm competent to use particular pyrotechnics explosives and stuff like that. So that's absolutely fine. But I still wouldn't go in and say I will do explosives on my own. I will go in and I will assist someone who has been doing it for 20 years. of course I will. And it's like, and I will know some of the stuff they're talking about, but some of the stuff I'll have no idea what they're talking about. It's like when they start actually cutting open. No, I shouldn't say that because that's technically illegal.
it's fine.
Just explosives in general is a niche area for sure. I mean, people might be like, oh yeah, explosions fun. Of course, but it's extremely
dangerous. Intricate. Yes. There's lots of details. Like
there is so much that can go wrong. And it's right. Like, and you want to be around the most competent people. And I consider myself competent. I've been on buttons before where I've been in charge of setting off the debts and on all sorts of things, and I've been fine. And I've also nearly got sacked for not pressing the button, because I've seen something which I do not agree with. So I've refused to fire and I've been chewed out by my boss because of
really?
Yes. And even had a stuntman come over.
Despite of it being a safety concern.
Yes.
Safety.
Yes.
Yep.
Interesting. Yes.
That has happened to me before. But you know, it comes with a job. I know I was in the right, so you know, it's
fine. I was about to say, I don't think your judgment was waned from making that decision to just not fire it, you know, based off of safety, you know.
I mean, not to dwell on other things.
You're not naming names. Don't name names.
No, I know people that have done bad things with explosives.
Some ass backward shit. Yeah.
Worse. But gotcha. It's a dicey part of the industry. But it's special effects. It's what we do. It's like, for instance, you say, I mean, to bring up something which happened in America, but bringing up the armory department and that must feature
with rust. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That is a horrible thing that happened and shouldn't have happened, but it can happen. You know, if the wrong things happen and people come in who aren't experienced, stuff like that, and start thinking, oh, well, of course I can do this on my own, you know, sort of thing. And want to run before they can walk. And you can miss things, and that's something that I never want to do myself. So I will never overreach or try and bullshit someone that I can do something which I can do, but I will say that I can do it to the absolute best they will ever see. You know, I'm going to be like, well, no, I will help somebody, or I will have somebody there with me, and I can do it, but I want someone else there with a bit more experience. You know, that sort of thing, and that's. That because pyrotechnics, I think you've got to be really specialized and just do pyrotechnics.
You can't get away with competency alone.
there are people who know pyro inside and out, and those are the people you really want around. I mean, you can have an everyday tech to help out, but unless they've actually been, you know, properly trained in everything and know all the safety concerns and stuff like that. You know, you've really got to be careful. That's just my opinion. I mean, I'm not sure whether that's shared industry standard, but it's just myself, from my own point of view. Of course, I like pyrotechnics. I'm happy to do them, but I do speak my concerns and do
right.
And sometimes I actually got taken off of a pyro job because I said, you know, it's like, and somebody else volunteered who had less experience than me. And went and did it and goes, well, I'll just let them want to do it. And it's like, yeah.
Throw all the caution to the wind. All right.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, well, fine, whatever.
You go. Yeah, it's at least not your liability. Yeah,
exactly. So yeah,
it's just things points like that, about liability.
And I think that was probably the same circumstance with Rust too. It was just a horrible thing, but I'm just saying, like, in terms of the line of communication and the line of, like, you know, basically taking any and all safety concerns to the side. And so many people, especially like seeing it on film Twitter, say that, well, it's the armorer, it's the first AD, it's the director, it's, well, no, it's Alec Baldwin, he's a producer. It's just like, well, you can point fingers all you want. I wouldn't, because it's a failure on all accounts. Like, just a straight up failure on every single account, every single department.
Yeah.
I think one of the main warnings should have been the fact that people had already walked out before it happened because of
camera department walked out, stunts even walked out as according to an article like just a month ago. And they even, like, as far as like the fucking what was it, Chris? Was it the FBI who determined that, like, there was no way a bullet can jam in that gun?
Right.
And Alex's account on the Stephanopoulos interview was that, oh no, it jammed. Like, I pulled the hammer back and it didn't fire off. Although the FBI determined that that's impossible with that model gun. Like, there's no way. So again, who can you blame? There's so many things to blame. There's so many fucking things tossed up in the air. The one thing that should never be,
questioned or compromised
is safety. Like, that is just insane to me. Like, it's just, even the stunt people were like, hang on, what? Like, there's like live rounds on set. That's a problem, isn't it? It's like, well, yeah, but I mean, we're kind of going through some safety meetings and we're pressed for time and we got to get this shoot over with. You know what I mean? It's like, you're you're not helping this situation. And like in your situation, well, I'm just going to hire another dude who's going to do it, you know, to just basically say yes to everything. Although you're jeopardizing safety.
Yeah. I was still on the job. It's just, I moved over to, prepping another part of Pyro,
right.
But
fair enough.
But just, not doing what they were doing. Yeah. Which was a little bit more intricate.
Yeah. Yeah. But it shows your level of confidence too, because like you said before, it like the people who run that are like smart as fuck, like engineer ass, like people. Like there was one dude who worked in special effects who I met, and he's from Texas, but he's like his like brother works for Boeing. Like he's an engineer ass engineer. Like he knows everything, and he's smart. But I can tell that's a really hefty job to put on yourself if you don't have the wherewithal or the confidence to have it to do it.
Exactly. It's just that there are things that could go wrong. Would I know how to solve them if they did go wrong?
Oh,
it's
all absolutely. Those sort of things.
You just got to get ahead. It's absolutely ridiculously easy to go in and just get a bit of twin flex, you know, bit of wire, connect it up to a firing box, turn yourself to armed and press a button. You know, that anybody can do that. But what if it doesn't go off? Do you disconnect? Do you disarm? Do you go over and check it out? What are the steps you take?
It's
you know, all sort of things. It's like and is anybody around? Is the actor in the right position? You know, it's not as simple as it sounds.
Yes.
No.
And it's just a lot of things you've got to look for. And which is what happened on the, well, I told you in detail, like I can't say in detail,
yeah.
But I told you in detail what happened and on what particular job it was. But I basically was on the firing box with my boss in my ear. He was over with the director, and he was watching on the monitor. And when he would say in my ear what button, I would press the button, but I wouldn't be looking at the box. I know where the buttons are on my hands, so it's almost like playing a keyboard. It's like,
right.
I would be looking, obviously not resting on the buttons, but I'd be like ready to go, like just hovering above.
But you're watching for cues and stuff.
Yeah, well no, it's the cue is my boss telling me.
Oh,
yeah,
but I'm
watching.
Yeah.
I'm also watching the set, because you've also got to have a line of sight.
Yeah.
And for the first few takes, it's absolutely fine. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, I sit, you know, and I'll just do it. And then reset. And then the fourth time we're doing it and I see a stuntman get his arm caught over where I know a debt is, and I'm just like,
nope.
And yeah. And I hear one.
No.
One. And it's like, obviously they're filming, so I can't reply or anything like that, but I've disarmed.
Yeah.
And it's like, one. And it's like,
no.
He was fuming when he came out. He's like,
wouldn't he see that though on while shooting? If they're seeing it in frame, they would see that stuntman getting caught, no? Interesting. Okay.
Didn't have the chance to ask. So.
Ah, I see. Yeah. Yeah.
It was just it came down to a monetary amount that I had cost the film, apparently. So.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, I nothing happened. You know, I did. It wasn't like I got sacked off the film or anything. I finished when I finished. It's like, and the stuntman actually thanked me. He's like, thank you, but not. You know, I saw you had your arm caught. Yeah.
So you know, you did the right thing. Yeah,
of course I did. Yeah, yeah. I know I did. Yeah, I know I did.
Yeah,
it's that's crazy. I mean, this is we've been all going on after like past an hour now, right? Like
I think way past.
Yeah, we're at an hour and a half. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Was there anything else, Christine, that you wanted to talk about?
No, or Leon, if you need to let you go home.
Yeah, I've got
you
got
it.
Back,
yeah. You should. Yeah. Oh gosh, yeah. Let's wrap this shit up then. ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Leon, for participating in the podcast. Thank you for coming on. We want you to come back again, especially if you're here in Texas. I mean, cool. Yeah, we got to hit you up and get you on the pod.
Sorry, I couldn't say too much stuff that would get me canceled.
Yeah, but... nobody
wanted to cancel. No, we're the same way. Sometimes we overshare and probably shoot ourselves in the what?
Yeah.
So it's best to just keep it clean, you know. Ladies and gentlemen, that's been the Get Realism's podcast. If you thought we've forgotten, we haven't. Get your books today. GetRealisms.com, ladies and gentlemen. co-written by the three guests on the previous episode before this one with Kelly, Jason Cates, and hair and makeup extraordinaire Roxanne McDaniel. GetRealisms.com. Pick up your books. Get all your shit today. And UrsleyFilm.com. Didn't forget about that, to watch Ursley now on VOD. So watch it, gather your friends, gather everyone, and watch a dope ass mermaid film. That's it. That's it for the podcast. That's it for me. I ran out of podcasts. Christine.
Yes.
It's time to say goodbye. Thank you so much. Facebook.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Instagram.
Bye-bye from the UK.
Bye-bye from the UK. See you guys.